We are in a study, in a journey through the Old Testament book of Hosea, and we're returning to that this week after a week off. Hosea, he was a prophet sent by God to the kingdom of Israel, God's people, and he was sent there to live out and to share God's message of judgment and also to express God's love to this nation who was being unfaithful to God. And in all of this, our theme for Hosea is we see that God's limitless love, it isn't always pretty, but it is always ever and completely beautiful. And we see how God works that. We're in chapter 8 this morning, so if you want to turn there. If you don't have a Bible, the Bible right in front of you, you can be found on page 755. In Hosea chapter 8, but you can turn there, and I'll tell you where we've been. God told Hosea to marry a woman who would become a prostitute or be unfaithful to him. And this was a visual way of showing that Israel, that their sin is spiritual adultery against God. And then God promised to woo his people back into relationship with him, and God would buy his people back through his son Jesus. And in the same way, he had Hosea go and find his wife and buy her back so she could be back in a relationship with him. So it's really a neat book, and we've been talking lately about the judgment, the sin of Israel, what they've been doing in their unfaithfulness and what it looks like, their unfaithfulness of God. In our last message, we looked at their unfaithfulness because they had a relationship with God without love, and just the emptiness that means and that brings to the table. And then today, what we find is that God forces these people to face the full effect of what they've been seeking apart from God. So that's what we're looking at this morning in Hosea chapter 8. We'll start right in verse 1. So let's just start reading, and I'll stop along the way and see where we need to get. It says this: "Set your trumpet to your lips, one like a vulture is over the house of the Lord, because they have transgressed my covenant and rebelled against my law." Basically, what God's saying through Hosea here is, take warning, Israel. Judgment is coming because you've broken my covenant. Remember, this is the two-way covenant. They have the one-way covenant that God says, you'll always be my people, you're always mine. But we also have this two-way covenant of blessings, and you've broken that, and because of that, judgment's coming. Because you've rebelled against me, or you've been unfaithful to me. It says, to me they cry, my God, we Israel know you. Isn't that great? So again, they're saying with their lips, well, we know you, God. You're our God. But the reality isn't that, and he goes on and shares this reality. Israel has spurned the good. The enemy shall pursue them. Basically, they're being unfaithful in their actions, aren't showing that they love and know God. They made kings, but not through me. They set up princes, but I knew it not. With their silver and gold, they made idols of their own destruction. And basically, your decisions haven't shown that you know me. I have spurned your calf, O Samaria. My anger burns against them. How long will they be incapable of innocence? For it's from Israel, craftsmen made it. It is not of God. The calf of Samaria shall be broken to pieces. And what he's talking about, again, is this golden calf they had that they worshipped Baal, this foreign god of fertility and harvest. And they made this idol. And basically what God's saying to them is, you know what, you're being unfaithful and you're showing you don't know me even in your devotion. You can say what you want with your mouth, but you're not showing that you know me and not showing that you love me. In verse 7, and I want you to star this in your Bible. For they sow the wind, and they shall reap the whirlwind. Just want you to listen to that for a minute. For Israel sows the wind, but now they'll reap the whirlwind. Have you ever said that to somebody? You're going to reap the whirlwind now. Debbie always laughs at me because that's always one of my sayings, like when the girls are getting me on, it's time to reap the whirlwind. And basically what God's saying here, okay, when he's talking about sow the wind, or you've been going with the wind. Now the wind brought blessing. It would bring in weather to water their crops. It would symbolize freedom. You know, you're up on the wings of the wind and all of this, and there was a great side to the wind, or it was appealing. And he says, you've sown what you've desired, but you're going to reap the whirlwind, or you're going to face the full consequences of the wind. You're going to see there's another side of the wind. And that wind, that side of the wind brings destruction. And basically what God's saying, he's promising his tough love to Israel. He says, you know what? You're going to have my love, but you're going to have my tough love. Where he's going to make them experience the full fruits of their sin or their unfaithfulness. They're going to experience, yeah, all right, this is what you desired, then this is what you're going to get. Remember a couple weeks ago we talked about Hebrews chapter 12 where God says he disciplines those he loves. Well, here's he's disciplining by saying, you know what? Fine, you want this? Experience it to the fullness and you're going to see it's not all it's cracked up to be. You're going to see where it gets you. Anybody ever experienced tough love or have given tough love? Maybe your parent gave you tough love, or as a parent, you gave tough love. What are you doing with that? Well, you're allowing the one you love to experience the pain of their decisions, right? Or their desires, so that they can see how good they have it. And how bad off they'd be by themselves. And this is what God's saying here in verse 7 of chapter 8. He says, you want to sow the wind? You're going to reap the whirlwind. And now, all the way through chapter 10, he shows them the whirlwind. He said, this is what you're going to get. You're going to go out and you're going to follow your desires, and here's where your desires are going to get you. Actually, the rest of verse 7 starts it. He says, you're going to have grains, and they're going to have heads, but they're going to have no heads, and they're not going to lead any flour. You know what he's saying? He's saying, basically, you're going to be useless. Sure, you may think you look good, but you know what? You're going to be pretty useless. And then he says, you know, you're going to make allies with other nations, but you have nothing to offer them, so they're just going to take you. Basically, what God's saying is, this is going to be the opposite of what you thought you were doing. You thought you were going to be very important and vital, and really what you're going to be is useless. And that's what you're going to find. What you thought was the road to importance, you're going to find is the road to nothing. He goes on and he says, you're going to worship other gods and you're going to seek them. And in verse 13, he makes a statement. He says, he, meaning God, will remember your iniquity and punish your sin. Basically, you know what God's saying to them? God's saying, so you may think you're fooling it, but there's going to come a day that you're going to have to pay up on all of this. Or you're going to deserve this. You're going to get what you deserve, what you really sowed. And then chapter 9 opens, and Hosea asks a question. Rejoice not, Israel. Or he tells them, rejoice not, Israel. Why? Why shouldn't they rejoice? Well, he goes on, and he talks to them about why they shouldn't rejoice. Because you have pleasure, it's all going to dry up, right? That's what he's saying. He's talking about that. They're going to be on the threshing floors, and you've loved the prostitute's wages, or you got all these blessings of giving yourself to other people, your unfaithfulness. All that's going to dry up. It's going to become nothing for you. Isn't that what we saw in chapter 1 and 2 where he's talking about Hosea and his wife Gomer, and he says this is going to happen? This is what he's saying. You're going to live in your sin. This is what you're going to end up with. Not only that, you're going to be taken to Assyria where you won't even be able to worship God. You're not remaining in the land. And you're going to be stuck there in Assyria where you can't even sacrifice to God. You're going to experience great loss. And you're going to think you're going to be able to outsmart this and get this. Verse 6 says, the thing itself shall be carried to Israel, Assyria, as tribute to the great king. Ephraim shall be put to shame, and Israel shall be ashamed of his idols. I'm sorry, I'm in the wrong chapter. It says the day of, it talks about going to Egypt, but Egypt will gather them, and Memphis will bury them. You know what he's saying there? He's saying, you know what, you're going to get carried off to Assyria, but you're going to try to escape, and you're going to say, oh, we can escape God's judgment, and you flee to Egypt. And you're going to go to Egypt, and you know what you're going to discover when you go to Egypt? They're going to enslave you in Egypt. So even though you think you're going to get around it, have you ever been there with sin? You think you're going to find a way around it, and then you find, oh, there wasn't a way around at all. And this is what he's saying is going to happen to them, is that they're going to experience all these things. And then verse 7 of chapter 9 says, the days of punishment have come. The days of recompense have come. Israel will know it. You guys are going to know it. You know what he's saying? There's going to come a time where you're going to have to account for your lifestyle or what you're doing. And when I read this, you know what I thought of? Like the first time you're out on your own, you know, when you get your first credit card and you think you're so, man, I'm so independent and things. And you're just like, this is awesome. Until your first credit card bill comes. Anybody ever have that happen to you? And you're just like, oh, you mean this stuff wasn't just, wow, there's a day coming when payment will be made. And you're going to have to give an account. And that's what God's saying to them. You may think you're getting away with it, but here's my tough love. You're going to live in this and you're going to discover that a payment needs to be made. And then for a second time in verse 9, he says that I'm going to remember your iniquity and punish your sin. And then he goes on to talk about their worship and what's going to become of their worship. Remember, the God that they're worshiping, other than the one true God, is this god Baal. And it was in the ancient world, Baal was a huge god and was supposed to be a fertility and harvest. So they would bring sacrifices so they could have great crops and so that they could multiply as a people and everything like that. So that's this Baal. So you know what God tells them in verse 10? He says, because of your sin, you're going to have no birth, no pregnancy, no conception. And even if you have kids, they're going to be taken away till there's none. He goes on down in verse 14. He says, and they'll be given a miscarrying womb and dry breasts. Do you know what he's saying there? You're seeking this God to bless you, this idol to bless you and make you fertile. And you're going to discover the exact opposite is true. Verse 16, he says, your root will dry up and you won't be able to bear any fruit. Now he's saying, well, you're seeking this God to do all this, but you're going to discover that where it leads you is the dried up roots and no fruit. God says, I'm going to reject you for your unfaithfulness and you're going to become wanderers. You see that in verse 17? Okay, you'll become wanderers among the nations. You know, that is one of the curses or one of the consequences that Israel still sees today. Do you know that? The Jews are still scattered throughout the world. That was a consequence of God saying, you know what, you want your own way? Here's your own way. And you're going to see what it gets you. And he says, you're just going to keep wandering. Go nowhere. Verse 10 then opens up. Chapter 10 opens up and it says, you know what, guys, you took my blessing, the blessings that I gave you, and you used it for yourself. And you're going to have to bear the guilt for that. And here's what's going to happen to them in the beginning of chapter 10. He says this, you're going to have no kings. They're going to be taken away. Who you set before you to protect you. It's all going to be taken away. You're going to experience shame. Their altars in Samaria are going to be taken down, and these golden calves that they made are going to be taken away as prizes for the conquering armies that come in. So you're going to experience this shame because you're not going to have anything left. Your high places are going to be destroyed. All the places you thought were holy are going to be desecrated, made nothing. And this pain that you're going to experience as a result of going your own way is going to be so great that look at verse 8. That they're going to say to the mountain, cover us, and to the hills, fall on us. Do you know what's happening? God's saying to them, punishment's coming, and it's going to be deserved, and it's going to be so great that you will wish that a mountain falls on you to put you out of your misery. It's pretty strong, isn't it? That's what God's saying to them. You know what? You want to go your own way? Fine. Here's where it's getting you. Here's what's going to happen to you. God goes on to remind them how he spared them in the desert. When the covenant was first made with Moses, he said, I spared you. And you had righteousness. It was set before you. And set this covenant with you. But here's what you did. Verse 13. And I want to close out with this. It says, but instead of receiving my blessing and seeing how good you had it, you have plowed iniquity. You have reaped injustice. You have eaten the fruit of lies. Because you have trusted in your own way. And in the multitude of your warriors. Therefore, the tumult of war shall arise among your people, and all your fortresses shall be destroyed. And Shalman destroyed Beth Arbel in the day of battle. Mothers were dashed in pieces with their children. Thus it shall be done to you, O Bethel, which was one of their holy places, because of your great evil. At dawn, the king of Israel shall be utterly cut off. Now, this isn't a real happy story this week in Hosea, and you're going to discover a lot of that with Hosea. What this is, though, it's a story of God's tough love. He's basically causing Israel to experience the fullness of their unfaithfulness. He's saying to them, you know what? You want to play the whore? Then you'll have to live it to the fullest. You want to be a whore? You think that looks good to you? You're going to discover the whole reality of it. It's going to be more horrible than you could ever imagine. You see, just as any tough love situation, God's making them experience this fullness of the consequences of sin so that they'll see the beauty of faithfulness to him and they'll wake up and they'll say, what have we done? Where have I been? Sort of reminds you of the prodigal son, doesn't it? And what happened with him. And this is what God is taking the Israelites through because of their unfaithfulness. So why do we have this? Well, because it's important for us to pay attention to this so that we don't have to go through this. So that we don't get wooed away. And so that we understand, you know what? If I'm unfaithful to God, this is where it's going to lead. Not because God's mean, but because this is what I chose. And this is what happens. And it's going to help us to seek God and his forgiveness rather than seeking sin, rather than seeking our own desires to do things our own way, as God said. So in light of all of that, here's our truth this morning from this passage, from these three chapters. Here it is. God's tough love helps us grasp the reality of our sin so that we can appreciate his forgiveness. That's why God gives us his tough love. So that we can see, man, sin is pretty bad. Because sometimes I think we gloss it over, and we can do that. I know I do. And you can say, oh, that wasn't a big deal. That wasn't a bad, bad thing. But this is where it gets us. And we grasp the reality of it. And then we start to see, wow, so for God to forgive me of that, it's more awesome than I could even imagine. So I want to go through our passage just a little bit because I want to pull out a couple things that we can learn about the reality of sin. That God shows what's going to happen to these people. Because in facing the full effect of what they were seeking in their unfaithfulness, in their sin, we get to discover some realities for our own sin so that we can understand where our unfaithfulness to God takes us. So here they are, some realities concerning sin that we find here. First is this, sin never satisfies. Going any way but God's, being unfaithful to God, it will never satisfy. And why is that important? Do you know why? Because we sin because we want to. We sin because we think we're getting something out of it. And we need to know, guess what? Sin will never satisfy. We'll never truly find what we are seeking to fill us in seeking anything other than God. And the reality is, we often experience the exact opposite of what we think we're wanting to get, what we're desiring. And we see this over and over again in the passage, don't we? We saw they sought fruitfulness, didn't they? They sought to be fruitful. And where did it get them? Fruitlessness, right? They were basically barren. That's where it got them. But we were seeking it for this. Here's what you found, though. They sought significance with their allies, but they experienced subjugation instead. They experienced, yeah, we're going to be just like the other nation. No, you're not. You're going to be ruled by them. Not going to just find freedom. You're going to find slavery. You see, this is the deception of sin. This is why Satan is called the deceiver. Because he, in sin, we see a pleasure. We see something that looks so pleasurable, only to find that it's misery once we get in it. And then once we're in it, we feel like we're too far in to get out of it. Have you ever been there? I mean, let's look at some of this. Lying. Have you ever been dishonest? Why are you dishonest? Well, I know why I can struggle with that is because you think you want other people to trust you. You want to look good before other people, right? So you want to put your best foot forward, and sometimes that might not even be true. So, hey, I want to portray something that's not so that I can find acceptance, so that I can find, so that people can trust me. What's the reality? We get in lying. What happens to us? First of all, we become a slave to a lie, because then we're trying to protect the lie always, right? We find anything but freedom. And then also, when we're found out that we've lied, what do we lose? We lose acceptance. We lose trust from other people. And everything we thought we'd get in it, we lose. Let's look at another sin maybe we could struggle with. Gluttony. You ever struggle with that? Yeah. You see something, you say, oh, it's going to satisfy me. So let me just pig out, or let me go do this. And I'm going to be so satisfied. I'm just going to take what I want. What's the reality of that? Right after you said, oh, I'm going to be satisfied. How do you feel? Horrible, don't you? That didn't satisfy. In fact, I think I want more. And we find that that's never going to satisfy. We can look at sexual sins. Things like pornography, you know, where guys especially can be drawn to pornography, but we say, oh, I want this pleasure, and we put ourselves towards that. We say, yes, it's going to give me satisfaction. It's going to give me pleasure. Do you know what it really gives us? It gives us shame. And it gives us a false picture of the beauty of intimacy that God's created. And all of a sudden, it's become this thing where we want more and more, and we just want to be stimulated rather than to learn to love. And we find everything I hoped it would give me in pleasure, it's given me the exact opposite. And I'm trapped. Have you ever been there? Have you ever been there and struggling with things that you've struggled with? And you're sitting there saying, but that's not where I thought it was going to get me. In fact, it's the exact opposite. Do you know why? Because sin never satisfies. It never offers what it claims. And we see that here. You know what else we see here? That the price of sin is too great. The cost of sin, to go our own way, is much more than we could ever want to pay. And if we knew it going in, we wouldn't do it. And God paints this picture of the penalty of Israel's unfaithfulness. And we begin to see the horror of sin. What's going to happen to them? Everything gets taken away from them, doesn't it? Everything they relied on and said, this is who we are, got taken away from them. They've lost it all. Powerless, taken from their land. Many people were killed. They're being without God's guidance. They're without anything they grew to enjoy in their land. And that's why when they finally will wake up and see the cost, they'll say, it's better than if we're, it would be better for us to be crushed by this mountain than to have to deal with this anymore. Wouldn't it be neat if we knew the price of sin before we sinned? We get an opportunity to. And what's the price of sin? Well, the ultimate price of sin is death, as you probably know. I mean, Romans talks about that, right? Paul says the wages of sin or the price of sin is death. Death entered this world through Adam, through his sin in the garden. And the first thing God says, because you did this, on the day you eat of this, you will die. And on that day, they began to die. And we face physical death as a reminder of the price of sin, and also as a reminder that there's an even worse death coming if we die in our sin, and that's an eternal death, an eternal separation from God forever. Experience the opposite of God, which is evil, for all eternity. That's the price of sin. But do you know there's also a price we pay for sin that's too high even to deal with in our everyday lives? Sin is costly here and now. Sin damages our relationship with God, this two-way covenant. Again, if we've trusted in Jesus, then we don't experience that eternal death, that eternal separation. But sin still has a price, and it damages our relationship with God, keeps us from experiencing to know what it means to be His, keeps us from coming to Him, trusting Him, loving Him, experiencing His goodness and His guidance, because we're blinded. It also can destroy our other relationships with each other, because sin breaks away relationships over and over again. Lying, pain, all these betrayal, all these things. You know what? You know why that is? Because sin separates. And that's the price of sin. The cost of sin. I mean, just imagine this. And as I was working on this, I sort of imagine, what would it be like if God made us pay the price for every time we sin? We have to pay the price of that sin, or we experience that. It wouldn't be fun, would it? I mean, imagine that over and over and over again. Thank God for His mercy that He doesn't make us pay the price of every time we sin, that we don't experience that to the fullness. But through His patience and His love, he allows us. But do you know, a third thing that we find through this, though, is, though, sin's price must be paid. And that's what He says to the Israelites. You know, all of this is God's promised judgment upon them. And you know what? Israel's heard this before. They've had prophets coming to them saying, judgment's coming, judgment's coming. And they could sit back and go, yeah, I know it's coming, but that'll be long after I'm gone and all of that. Well, there's something that happens here that makes it real. And it's actually at the end of chapter 10. God mentions this guy, Shalman, is coming, right? You know who Shalman is? Shalman's short for Shalmaneser. You know who Shalmaneser was? He was the king of Assyria who ruled from 727 to 722 BC. Do you know when Israel was taken in captivity? 723. So he's basically saying, you know this guy. That's when it's going to come. It's right in front of your face. It just got real. This punishment that was coming just got real, because sin's price must be paid. You see, the price of sin must always be paid. What the Israelites and the Israelites would have to pay that. They were in that one-way covenant with God so that they were always kept by Him, but they were going to experience the pain, the loss, the separation, and all of that. And they wouldn't experience the ultimate payment of that sin for over 700 years to come. You see, God says the payment of sin must be paid, and then He pays it Himself through Jesus. This is what Paul says in Romans chapter 3. Right after he says, all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God, here's what he says, and are justified, or made right with God, by His grace as a gift through the redemption that is in Christ Jesus. You know what redeemed? Buy back. Paying the price. Whom God put forward as a propitiation by his blood to be received by faith. You know what he says propitiation means? As the payment. So God says, you know what? All have sinned and you fall short of the glory of God, but you can be justified because I'm coming in Jesus. And I'm going to pay the payment. But it always has to be paid. Know this about God's justice. God always has to do what he says he's going to do. And he says there's a payment for sin. He doesn't wipe out that payment. It needs to be paid. It was paid ultimately by Jesus. Thank God for this. Thank the gift of his grace. But you know what? For those who haven't placed their faith in Jesus, they need to pay that. Through that eternal death, that separation. But God never takes the price of sin away. It always needs to be paid either by Jesus or ourselves. And even as believers, we shouldn't grow complacent in our sin, because we're still going to experience that price in the here and now. That's going to need to be paid unless we run back to God and experience his fellowship and forgiveness. You see, unfaithfulness to God, sin, it's a big deal. Know this, if you don't know anything else from today, sin is a big deal. Those little things you do during a week and you say, that wasn't too bad, it's a big deal. Not only destroys our fellowship with God, it leads to death. Sin cannot satisfy. Only Jesus, who ultimately defeats sin, can satisfy. Can give us what we need, because it's through him that we find life. It's him, through him, that we find everything we're seeking in seeking sin, we find in Jesus. We find joy, we find pleasure, we find life, we find peace, we find all of those things in Jesus. That's what we get through him. So, as we close today, how do you respond to this? How do you respond to something like this where we just has this spelled out and it's God's tough love? Man, I want to offer you three things you can do this week to respond to this. First is, you know what? Chase God, not sin. This week, instead of saying, you know what? I'm going to be weighed by all these things. Rather than that, you know what, God? What do you have for me? And that's a great question you can ask each and every day. God, what do you have for me today? Wake up in the morning and ask that. And you know what? It's going to frame your day. It's going to change your day. Because in him we find life through Jesus. When Jesus was with a Samaritan woman, of all things, as we talked about Samaria, and he's sitting in a well with her, you know, and she comes and he asks her for water. And he says to her this in John chapter 4. He says, everyone who drinks of this water will be thirsty again, but whoever drinks of the water I will give him will never be thirsty forever. The water that I'll give will become in him a spring welling up to eternal life. That's what Jesus gives us when we seek him. So that's one thing we can do. Chase God, not sin. Second, you know what we can do in response to this? Warn others. Sin leads, where sin leads to should make us not want anybody else to experience that. I don't know about you, but that should change the way we look at our neighbors who don't know Jesus, or family members who don't know Jesus, because they're going to have to pay that price. It should give us the spiritual urgency to let people know where the answer to their satisfaction and fulfillment lies. In Jesus. I mean, do you realize that anybody who dies without trusting in Jesus is eternally separated from God and all that is good forever? They experience evil forever. Unspeakable pain. They're lost. And if we grasp this, we should want others to experience that forgiveness. So here's what I want you to do this week. Purpose. One person God brings to mind that you say, I want to at least put up my flag of who I am in Jesus to them this week. And I want to pray for them. And you'll see on your work it out sheet. You write that name and give it to somebody else so they can be praying as well. One person. Who you can warn in a good way. And then third is to worship. You know, we see all of this and we see the evil of sin, but then we also get to see it in the light of Jesus. The answer for sin, the payment for sin. What makes everything right again is Jesus. Jesus paid this price for our sin. Where would we be without him? So here's one other thing you can do this week. And I've done this, and it's kind of neat to do. At the end, it's neat to do. What I do is I'll write down in a day, and I'll just keep a little list of all the things I'm struggling with that are sin, that are against God, that I'm beating myself up for, that I'm experiencing consequences for, and say, man, oh, this stuff, oh, and I name it, and I write it down. And then at the bottom, I write this, Jesus paid it all. And then I take it, and I throw it out. That's one thing you can do this week so that you can be reminded, yeah, this sin is serious, and it's going to be painful to write that out. But then at the end, you say, but Jesus paid it all. So I'm going to trust in him. And that what that leads to is worship in us. See, God loves us. He loves us so much that he'll show us his tough love so that we can see what it looks like to live in our sin. Fortunately, he shows it to us so we don't all have to live through it, like in Hosea. But it lets us experience the reality of sin so that we can appreciate and run to his forgiveness. And that's the beauty of God's tough love. Let's pray.